You ready?
Cool. Okay, good evening, everyone. Welcome to this Kingborough Council meeting on Monday the 3rd of May 2021. It's 5:30 p.m. My name's Dean Witch. I'm the Mayor of Kingborough, and I am pleased to welcome you all to our meeting and officially declare it open. Welcome to members of our community in the gallery, and also to those of you who are watching at home on Facebook live streaming. To let you all know that not only do we live stream these meetings, we also record the meetings with the audio available on our council website, usually from about Wednesday afternoon following the meeting. I've just confirmed with the general manager that the audio has commenced.
Confirmed.
So that's confirmed. Next, I'd like to acknowledge the traditional custodians. Kingborough Council, at the start of every meeting, acknowledges the traditional and original custodians of the land in which we meet, the Muwinina people. The Muwinina people are the original owners of this land, and we recognise their elders past, present and emerging. Attendees this evening is myself, Councillor Winter, Councillor Westwood, Councillor Bastone, Councillor Cordova, Councillor Fox, Councillor Midgley, Councillor Street, Councillor Wass and Councillor Reet. From our staff this evening, we have our General Manager, Gary Arnold, our Director of Engineering Services, David Reeve, our Chief Information Officer is Fred Malt, our Director of Governance, Recreation and Property is Daniel Smee, our Director of Environment, Development and Community is Katrina Stevenson, our Manager of Environmental Services is John Dool, our Manager of Development Services is Tasha Tyler Moore, our Coordinator of Statutory Planning is Melissa Stevenson, Media and Communications Advisor is Sam Adams, our Customer Services Coordinator is Kelly Nichols, and our Executive Assistant is Amanda Morton. Apologies, I have none formally. However, no, you can't. Under the regulations, you're unable to participate in the meeting. I'm sorry. So, as of this afternoon, I haven't received an apology from Councillor David Grace, and I haven't heard from him. To the contrary, there is someone in the gallery who appears to be aware of his whereabouts, but he hasn't advised Council formally that he is not arriving tonight, which is to my great disappointment. Confirmation of minutes. On page one, there's a motion that says that the minutes of the open session of Council meeting number 7, held on the 19th of April 2021, be confirmed as a true record. Would any Council like to move or second that? Moved by Councillor Fox, seconded by Councillor Midgley. All those in favour, please say aye. Those against? Motion is carried unanimously. Workshops held since the last Council meeting on the 26th of April, the aquatic feasibility study was discussed at a workshop. Declarations of interest. Does any Councillor have an interest to declare in tonight's meeting? Councillor Wass.
Thank you, Mayor. I don't have an interest to declare, but I do wish to advise the following in relation to DA 2021-34, that I and my wife are clients of Bubbles Dog Grooming, and in DAS 2020-6, that I actually viewed the property this morning in the rain.
Very good. Councillor Cordova.
Similarly, I viewed that property that Councillor Wass referred to.
Sure. Councillor Bastone?
I also viewed the property, and I am also a client of Bubbles Dog Wash. My dog is a client of Bubbles Dog Wash.
Thank you, Councillor Bastone. That's very good. Look, it's not a conflict of interest, but my dog has also been in the past a client of that excellent service. Okay, transfer of agenda items. Does anyone have an agenda item to transfer? No. Next item is on page 2, and there's a code of conduct panel determination report. There's a recommendation on page 2 as well. Someone like to move? Councillor Westwood puts a hand up to move. Seconded by Councillor Midgley. Councillor Westwood.
Thank you, Mayor. Tonight we have in our agenda paper a determination made by the Code of Conduct panel against one of our colleagues, Councillor David Grace. In one of our workshops, Councillor Grace physically threatened Councillor Reet, and subsequently a Code of Conduct complaint was lodged. Councillor Grace has been found guilty of breaching the code of conduct by the independent panel. The panel upheld the complaint and determined that he had breached parts 7.1 A, B and C and part 7.2. So just to clarify for those watching this from at home, part 7.1, a councillor must treat all persons fairly and must not cause any reasonable person offence or embarrassment, and they must not bully or harass any person. 7.2, a councillor must listen to and respect the views of other councillors in council and committee meetings and any other proceedings of the council and endeavour to ensure that issues, not personalities, are the focus of debate. The comment that Councillor Grace has been found to have made is that he would put our colleague Councillor Reet on her tail. In other words, he threatened to knock her off her feet because he disagreed with something she had said. This is never acceptable. It's not acceptable in any workplace, and it's certainly not acceptable around this table. The report from the Code of Conduct panel is quite damning, and it says that Councillor Grace showed no remorse for the comment he made. He also based his case on the fact that he had little formal education and used working man's language. So on behalf of those in our community who do have little formal education and do sometimes use a working man's language, I'm offended on their behalf because it doesn't matter what your level of education. Most decent people use good manners and they are respectful of other people. So apologies for that part. Apologies on behalf of Councillor Grace for that. And I am offended on behalf of those people. The punishment that was handed down was that Councillor Grace was to come in here tonight and publicly apologise to Councillor Reet for the comment he made. He's not here. He has not formally apologised, notified that he will be an apology, and his chair is empty. It's very disappointing, I think, that this issue has come to light because the Kingborough Council, as far as I'm aware, is considered to be a very highly functioning, appreciative of diversity, collaborative and productive council. And we have 10 representatives who sit at the table. We're all diverse and for the most part we respect that diversity and it leads to better decision making. It seems though that one of our colleagues is not necessarily representing the community. And for one of our colleagues to use his voice to physically threaten another colleague is unacceptable. the punishment handed down, I think, also included 6 hours of anger management training, which I'm sure Councillor Grace will benefit from. However, I personally don't think that the punishment fits the crime. It's not aligned with contemporary expectations and it doesn't afford Councillor Reet the respect she deserves in her place of work. We hold our children to higher account. If a child's in a classroom and they physically threaten another child, they will be removed for a period of time. Athletes are banned from matches, and certainly in this instance, I think a counsellor, a representative of the public, who uses their voice in such a way should also be removed. So we have before us the findings of the panel, the determination of the Code of Conduct panel, and we've been asked to resolve to receive the determination in relation to the complaint against Councillor David Grace.
Councillor Reed and then Councillor Bastone. Councillor Reed.
Thank you, and I thank the Deputy Mayor for her contribution on this. I wanted to start tonight by offering an insight into why it is that I'm so passionate about ensuring that as a community we stand up for what is right and that we are respectful of others. In 1996, at the age of 27, along with Lara Giddings, who was just 23, I was proud to be elected to Tasmania's Parliament. In fact, Lara and I were the first young women to achieve this. But as a result, we were both regularly subjected to sexist remarks about our ability to do our jobs based on our young ages and about our gender. Unfortunately, this has also extended at times throughout that period to frivolous media commentary about us, but not to the 30-year-old male who was elected at the same time as both her and I were. He was asked about his policies. I was asked hard-hitting questions about what toothpaste brand I used and my relationship status. I mean, heaven forbid, young women would want their place at a table other than the kitchen table. Since then, and particularly as having served as Minister for Women, I've been passionate about changing these outdated views and the sexist language associated with them, so that others who tread that path, and women more generally, would not be subjected to sexist remarks. Over the last 10 years that I've been on council, those in this room will know that I have stood up often against sexist language. I will offer alternative words in written documents, notices of motion, or debates when outdated or gender-specific terms are used. So when Councillor Grace made comments concerning a valued member of our staff that I believed was sexist, I once again spoke up. In fact, the panel determined that I had both the right and the responsibility to draw that issue to Councillor Grace's attention. I was not prepared for the aggressive response, the disruptive behaviour, and then being threatened with physical violence. As the panel concluded, whether or not Councillor Grace decided to go ahead with it, with the threat, did not justify it, nor did it excuse it. It caught me totally off guard, and it was a disproportionate response to my plea to not use that sort of language. I was very shaken up. Councillor Grace's response to my notice of motion about the recording of councillor workshops when I expressed concerns about feeling unsafe was, and I quote, his opening statement, "This is hilarious." I knew then that for the serious nature of this threat to be recognised and for someone in authority to call out that that behaviour is not okay, that I had to take this matter further. Thankfully, the Code of Conduct panel was there to do that, and they have upheld all of the breaches that I submitted had occurred. The week following the Australia-wide marches about ending violence against women, the panel conducted their hearing. I thought the timing was somewhat significant. A few weeks later, Councillor Anna Reynolds gathered a group of councillors together to release a statement about the way many women in local government feel that they are treated. Some of the online commentary was appalling. Statements like, "toughen up princesses," "get out if you can't handle the pressure," were thrown collectively at that group of councillors by members of the community. It is not good enough to say to anybody that you have to put up with this sort of abuse because you put yourself forward for public office. I have a thick skin. After 25 years in public life, I've had to get that, and I've had a lot of things hurled at me, every insult that people can muster. But I have never had a colleague physically threaten physical violence against me, no matter what you hear about the Labor Party. I hope that I never have to go through something like this again. The panel determined that Councillor Grace intimidated me with his threat, and it was sufficiently intimidating to be found bullying. I want to place on record how this has impacted me. It has been a distraction from the work I've been doing as a councillor and in other work that I do. It has caused undue stress to both myself and my loved ones, especially my children. I have come to my workplace here in this chamber for every workshop and council meeting. Under the local government regulations, I would ask for an extension of time.
Everyone wants to. Councillor Bastone, what do you like to move an extension time for an additional 3 minutes?
I would like to move it.
And seconded by Councillor Cordova. Councillor Reid.
Thank you. I have come here with intrepidation, feeling unsafe. I have walked on eggshells during debates waiting for another angry outburst, and a fellow councillor has indicated to me that they feel the same. I have even avoided eye contact with Councillor Grace in case this incites another abusive remark directed towards me. This all happened because I asked him not to use sexist language. As elected members, we have a duty to uphold a level of conduct that the community expects, and this does not include intimidating or threatening behaviour. There is no place in our community for violence against women, whether that be physical, financial or emotional. And everyone has a right to feel safe in their workplace, free from bullying or harassment. But I've had a learning curve through this as well. I learned that standing up to this sort of behaviour is difficult. During the hearing, I felt like many other victims do, when you start to question, what did you do to contribute to this occurring? I learned why so many victims don't stand up. I went home from the hearing feeling like I wish I hadn't, and then I realised, if I didn't, who was going to? I'm glad there's a framework within the Local Government Act to deal with this. I am glad that the Code of Conduct panel has upheld all of the parts of the complaint I made, and I thank them for sending this message that this type of behaviour is not expected of us as elected representatives. I am disappointed, though, that they did not give a suspension. What does one need to do in order to get a suspension? The panel has only ever handed out one suspension. I want to finish by saying I'm grateful for the support that I've received from many who are here tonight. I thank the councillors who, in the days and weeks following the incident, reached out to me to express their concern about what occurred and to check if I was okay. Your messages of support have been greatly appreciated. And I thank the councillors who released a statement today standing in a united voice behind me. That was an important message to send to our community. I look forward to putting this behind us. I'm passionate about Kingra and I don't want our council to be perceived negatively by those we represent. All of us in this room tonight, and one who isn't here, need to be more respectful of each other. And in closing, if Councillor Grace was here, I would say this. Threatening me was not okay. You made me feel unsafe. Please think about how you use your words. Think about how damaging they can be. And please learn from this.
Councillor Bastone.
Thank you. Mine is going to be a very weak thing after Councillor Reet's very passionate speech. But I'm worried in the sanctions pursuant to section 28ZI, brackets 2, brackets D, that the panel requires Councillor Grace to undertake at least 6 hours training and or counselling in anger management and appropriate workshop behaviour as determined by the Chief Executive Officer of the Local Government Association. My worry is, who's going to pay for this? Is this going to be yet another cost to our council for something that should never have happened in the first place?
General Manager.
Through you, Mr Mayor. Councillor Bastone, the answer to your question is that this council will foot the bill for that training.
I didn't see the audit. Councillor Midgley and then Councillor Street.
Thank you, Mayor, and I also will keep it brief and thank you, Councillor Reet, for sharing what was very passionate and truth and very heartfelt. And I am sincerely sorry that you had to go through this process. And as a witness to the Code of Conduct hearing, I was completely shocked at the process. And as Councillor Reet had said, it would have been easier perhaps to just let it go and standing aside other women, men in that situation to go through such a process. I was actually flabbergasted at the way that some of the questions that were asked, but also just the entire process as part of the Code of Conduct panel. And I do not think it would be good for your mental health and wellbeing and the after effects also, just pondering on the decisions and the 4 hours of strenuous situation leading up to it. So I hope that there can be some learning from this particular incident from the local government in regards to how they look at the Code of Conduct panel and perhaps really seriously question the processes from now on in. But early months in council, I did speak with our mayor in regards to how we tolerate certain behaviours in a council chamber. That would never be tolerated in any other workplace. And as a manager of 8 staff, if occurrences that we have seen through for Councillor Gray since my time on council would be put through a strict procedure where we would make sure that people did not feel threatened, we didn't have to walk on eggshells, that we didn't have certain behaviour that is demonstrated, because in any workplace that would never be tolerated. And I think as Councillor Reed said prior to the Code of Conduct hearing was the rally where people were calling out enough is enough. We need to change. We need to move forward. We do not tolerate this in any other workplace, but whereas in some reason in local government, it's continued to allow. So I really hope perhaps with our new government moving forward that they can have a serious look at this matter and consider that, you know, local government needs to also, and other levels of government, people need to feel safe. They need to be able to speak freely without being intimidated, without being threatened. We need to move forward as a society. So, yeah. And I also agree that it would have been, a suspension would have been great to occur, and it's absolutely shocking and disgusting to hear that we need to also pay for this anger management.
Councillor Stream.
Thank you, Mayor. The matters that are the subject of this Code of Conduct panel determination, I think, have been put succinctly and comprehensively by the Deputy Mayor, so I'm not going to recount them. But it's a matter of public record that I gave evidence to the panel about Councillor Grace's conduct. I was sitting beside him when it happened, as I would have been had he turned up tonight. The comment was made. It was aggressive. It was said with aggression. It crossed a line. It had no place in this chamber, and it had no place anywhere outside of this chamber. There is a level of debate in council, in any other workplace, that is acceptable. We criticise each other on a fortnightly basis, and that's part of the job. But Councillor Grace crossed a line that night, and I think that is undeniable. Mayor, it's an evening for Councillor Reed's voice, and I think it's an evening for women's voices more broadly, and so I'm going to leave my contribution there, except to say this. The panel found Councillor Grace guilty of the offences that he was accused of under the Code of Conduct panel, but the penalty imposed by the panel for that offence is, in my view, manifestly inadequate for the offence. That's not necessarily a criticism of the Code of Conduct panel. The Code of Conduct itself is manifestly inadequate, and as Councillor Midgley has quite rightly said, it's long since time that the Code of Conduct itself is reviewed and made into a document that better suits the modern needs of local government, and that the panel process better suits the modern needs of local government and puts a focus on people complaining of improper conduct so that people like Councillor Reed don't have to go through what Paula has gone through. Paula, I'm proud of you for going through what you went through. I'm proud of the dignity and poise that you went through it, and I'm grateful that you did.
Councillor Cordova and then Councillor Fox.
Thank you, Mayor. I would first like to, through you, Mayor, thank Councillor Reed for her powerful words tonight and for her courage in speaking up. And I recognise and acknowledge that it takes and it took tremendous bravery to face this and to go through with this. And it is a wake-up call, I think, to all of us that we need to speak up and call out bad behaviour when we see it. And I applaud you, Councillor Reed, for your courage in doing so. And I think we will all benefit from your bravery. The threats perpetrated against Councillor Reed should never have happened and must be called out. There is no excuse for threats, intimidation, bullying or harassment, not in this place and not anywhere. It should never happen, and it is our responsibility as citizens to call it out, but of course it is our responsibility as councillors. As these abuses are so regularly perpetrated by men, we need to acknowledge that our society needs to address male behaviour and culture. This incident and so many like it should never happen again in this place, and we have work to do to make sure that it doesn't happen again outside these walls either. As community leaders, we are rightly held to a higher standard of account. We need to demonstrate respect and act responsibly and invest in this office the civility and dignity that it deserves and that our community expects of us. Councillor Grace did not meet those expectations with his behaviour. By not attending tonight, I think it is extremely disappointing and it adds insult to injury. We owe it to our community and to the public discourse to condemn this type of behaviour in the strongest possible terms and to reiterate our support for Councillor Reet and our staff at Kingborough Council, because everyone deserves the right to feel safe at work. There is no excuse. Age is not an excuse. Education is not an excuse. Having a bad day is not an excuse. Feeling tired is not an excuse. Councillor Grace's behaviour, as we can read in the report from the Code of Conduct panel, was inexcusable. And through you, Mayor, I am personally so sorry, Councillor Reet, that Councillor Grace inflicted that toxic behaviour against you. And through you, Mayor, I reiterate that I applaud Councillor Reet's courage in speaking up. And I support her decision to call out that behaviour, and I join my councillor colleagues in condemning that behaviour unequivocally. I'm pleased that this council tonight is speaking with one voice in condemning this behaviour. Thank you.
Councillor Fox.
Thank you, Mayor. I'm getting quite emotional here. I'm thinking back of the time before the Code of Conduct existed and we only had standing orders. At that time, I was told to get on my broomstick by a fellow councillor. At another time, when I was deputy mayor, elected by the council, the next motion that was put was that my wages be halved. And that was because I was a woman. They halved my wages. At the time, I put a motion that I felt aggrieved and offended and upset, and the motion was lost, that of support for me. It was not carried. I must say that at that time, I was often the only woman on council or one of two, but even later, the halving of my wages was when there were at least three or four other women on council. I think it's really important that the Code of Conduct is strengthened. There are more women on council now than there ever have been, but it's not just about women. It's about how we respect not only councillors but members of staff. And I know there has been a history of not respecting members of staff, of intimidating members of staff from a certain councillor, to the point where that staff is now behind closed doors or panels so that they are no longer accessible to councillors. So I feel that Kingborough Council has been intimidated by Councillor Grace for the last, as long as he's been on council, I'm afraid. Various mayors have not had the courage to stand up to him. Many councillors have not had the courage to take out Code of Conduct, although I do recall one. And I'm really pleased that Councillor Reet has called it out as it is. It's about time that we took this positive action and response. And I also feel very strongly that the Code of Conduct should be strengthened and the way it's interpreted and applied should be strengthened. So I thank everybody around the table for their comments tonight. I can only apologise to Councillor Reet that I didn't commiserate with her earlier. I feel the process had to take its course. The process has taken its course, and it's now my opportunity, Councillor Reet, to say I'm very sorry. I hope it never happens again, and I hope that in the future, councillors who sit around this table will learn from this experience. Thank you.
Councillor Wass.
Thank you, Mayor. Firstly, I guess I'm very disappointed, and I won't labour on everything that's been said as much as I could. I'm very disappointed that Councillor Grace is not here tonight and not even had the decency to apologise. I just think that is just as bad, if you like, in some ways, that Whether he's running shy, I am not aware, but certainly by doing what he did, he needs to face up to it. I'm very sorry to Councillor Reap for the things that she's gone through, and to hear that, I think the good thing that will come out of this is that we stand united. And I think staff also can appreciate that we are prepared to stand united for them as well. And our community, because our community are going to be embarrassed when they read this and when they pick up the agenda. It's not something that we're very, very proud of. But at least nine of us can say that we are united in supporting. Doesn't mean that you have to like everyone that you work with, but you treat them with decency. We come from different backgrounds, regardless of whether we're educated or uneducated. We know what's right, we know what's wrong. Our mothers reinforced that many, many times as we were growing up. But the thing is that we have to respect other people before they will respect us. And I think in this occasion that has unfortunately been sadly lacking. I think when we look at around the other councils, we probably think that we're in the top echelon, and to come crashing down with this type of thing within our ranks, I think brings also a reality. And as I said before, I'm very proud of Councillor Reid going through what she did, because if that hadn't happened, not that this is Councillor Grace's first code of conduct, but let's hope it's the last one, and I look forward to being present when a meaningful and without reservation apology is accepted. And I'm really concerned after the General Manager just said that Council, in other words our ratepayers, are going to pick up the tab for this education. This is just not on. I mean, if you're guilty, you pay the price. And yet in this occasion, if you're guilty, you're laughing all the way. And I'm sorry, but I would suggest that we need to get in touch with the Minister of Local Government as soon as that person is known. And I think this is an item that we have to bring forward. If you're guilty, you pay for it. If you don't want to pay for it, as they would say in the classics, on your bike. I think we've come to that end, and I'm very upset, and I apologise not only to Councillor Reid, but I apologise to all councillors, to all staff, and to the public.
thank you, everyone, for your comments, particularly Councillor Reid, who I can't say any better than you've already heard. I hope you feel supported, if you didn't before, but certainly by the words tonight. I think Councillor Street said that Councillor Grace had crossed the line. He's right, of course, but hopefully this is a line in the sand moment for our council as well in terms of how much we are prepared to listen. Councillor Midgley's contribution probably struck me the most, because I have been sitting here often offering Councillor Grace more leniency than I would anyone else. And some of you are aware of the dilemma that I often have, because by calling out slight misbehaviour, it often makes the behaviour worse. And in my 2.5 years in the chair, I probably have been too lenient on him in council meetings, and the behaviour has often been behaviour that doesn't meet the standards that would be expected by Kingborough councillors, and often it's behaviour that doesn't meet the standards required under the meeting procedures. Thank you, Councillor Reid, for standing up. And you're quite right, you could have said nothing, and others have also said nothing, and I don't blame them for saying nothing, because it's really hard to do what you did, and there's probably not many people that would do what you did, but we're all better because you did it. And I think I've learnt a lot from going through this process with you, and I think I'll be better for that as well. It was shocking that the comment was made on the night, but it was worse almost that he refused to apologise. And he didn't just refuse to apologise for a short period of time. He effectively still is refusing to apologise because he hasn't turned up. I spent, I don't know how many conversations with him, begging him to apologise for the behaviour, telling him exactly what was going to happen, telling him that he would be forced to apologise if he didn't, telling him that it was the right thing to do to apologise. And the shocking thing is and was and has been found by the panel is that he didn't feel that he needed to. As I said in the stat deck to the panel, he told me that he thought the community would support him. I don't think they will. I think that the community has very high expectations here of Kingborough Council. And for the most part, we live up to them. But collectively, unfortunately for us all, we're all brought down by this behaviour. And we've been, I think, over a long period of time, well before I was mayor, in fact, we've been a councillor I think has been looked up to as one that's been has held itself with really high standards. And has been said, our standards collectively, unfortunately, because of the actions of one person, have been brought down. But we can do something about it, which is hopefully tonight. I do appreciate the collective statement. Councillor Grace hasn't turned up, which is inexplicable and just the most disappointing thing of all, that he hasn't arrived to make an apology even after everything. And this might be my last council meeting, and it is genuinely upsetting that he's chosen to do that tonight. And pending any other engagements, I'll be here in the gallery at the next meeting to hear it finally come through. Councillor Westwood.
Thank you, everyone, for your contributions. Through you, Mayor, Councillor Reet, Councillor Grace is not here to apologise to you, but we apologise to you and we thank you for using your voice.
The motion is that Council resolve to receive the Code of Conduct Panel Determination Report made on the 16th of April 2021 in relation to a complaint against Councillor Grace. It was moved by Councillor Westwood and seconded by Councillor Midgley. All those in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
Those against. Motion is carried unanimously. Thank you all. Right. We have to move on to questions without notice from the public. Does any member of the public have a question without notice? Ms. Komolinski. If you can just start for the record. Council, the Deputy Mayor might help with that button if you...
That's fine.
So it has to be a question without noticing. You start with your name and your suburb.
My name is Mayon Kolobinski and I live in Blackmans Bay. As you all know, I was Councillor Grace's advocate for the Code of Conduct panel hearing.
But I need to just draw your attention to the meeting procedures regulations, and questions without notice can't be about an item that's actually on the agenda tonight. So if your question is about the issue of Councillor Reet versus Councillor Grace, it's out of order.
No, it's not. It's not, Mayor.
Okay.
I honestly just want to provide a medical certificate to Council on Councillor Grace's behalf. Unfortunately, as you are all aware, he has had a long history of a medical condition and he's unable to come tonight. He will provide his apology.
Okay. Thank you. You're not actually asking a question, so it needs to be a question. And you haven't asked the question. I spoke to Councillor Grace, for the record, I spoke to Councillor Grace late this morning and he was fine, asking about how the night would go ahead, and he told me he would be here. So I'm highly sceptical at the excuse that's been provided. Any other questions without notice from members of the public? And Deputy Mayor, do you mind just turning the microphone off at the lectern? Thank you. We'll move on to questions on notice from the public. The time the agenda was compiled, there were no questions on notice from the public. Just for future reference, if you're watching at home and would like to ask a question, you can do so on notice if you can't be here at the meeting. You can do so by writing an email to kc@kingborough.tas.gov.au. Address your email to the General Manager and say that it's a question on notice for a future council meeting, and you'll have your question listed in the agenda in 2 weeks' time under questions on notice from the public. We now move to questions without notice from councillors. That's on page 9. Councillor Fox.
Thank you, Mayor. On page 219, there's a question I'd like to ask about a report that's before us on climate change, the action plan review. So 293, there is a response from staff in this report. The second dot point, the statewide planning scheme being consistently implemented that facilitates climate resilience development as well as progressive risk reduction in high climate change impact localities. I'm wondering why, considering the state government has recently brought out, I'm not sure if you called interim orders or changed the planning scheme to allow the building of homes without solar access to habitable rooms without being solar oriented, and also the concern that I have that insulation, double glazing and solar panels would have made a substantial difference to the consumption of energy in all of those houses, and I'm wondering why we haven't emphasised our concern with these new regulations in the planning scheme, which will have a massive effect on the climate change issues.
Sorry, Captain. Ms. Hollamore. Oh, Mr. Dool.
Thank you, Mayor. I did have a conversation earlier in the day with Councillor Fox about this, and I subsequently received the overall submission from the GAT, which pulled together the information from all the councils, and certainly the emphasis you made was picked up in the overall submission about not the specifics of the orders or whatever they are, but certainly the principles of the lack of the loss of things like solar orientation and things like that was picked up in the Legat submission as being a serious deficit in the current situation under the Climate Action Plan. But I could certainly hand over to Tasha to give a few more details about the latest orders.
Ms. Tylemore.
Through you, Mayor, the policy change that Councillor Fox is referring to was IPD4, Interim Planning Directive number 4, which the state government brought in rather swiftly and had changes to the solar access as well as other changes to setbacks. Following that, which had no public consultation, but they were bringing in policies, bringing in restrictions were brought in the planning scheme and they wrote the SPPs 4 years ago that still haven't come into effect for Kingbury yet and most councils. But following the IPD4, then they have now done PD8, so without the I, PD8, which is identical to IPD4, but it is a public consultation period. So council Kingbury will be putting a submission in about our position on those changes to the planning scheme, and I believe that the closing for that is mid-May, and members of the public as well as council are able to put submissions into that change of legislation and planning control.
Well, I'd like to thank both Mr. Dool and Ms. Tyler Moore for their very good response. Thank you very much.
Councillor Bastone and then Councillor Midgley.
Thank you, Mayor. And through you, Mayor, if I may ask a question of Mr. Reeve. Considering there is less than 2 months left of this financial year, when will work start on the sealing of Groombridge Road?
Mr. Reeve.
Through you, Mayor. So there'll be a number of projects that will probably carry forward into next financial year. So Groombridge Road's only recently come up to Council for a tender approval. So that is probably due to start later on, probably in June sometime is our starting date for that one, so that'll span into next financial year in terms of completion.
Thank you.
Councillor Midgley.
Thank you, Mayor. Last week I attended the Blackmans Bay community meeting and a few matters arose there. One of them was a bin has been removed near the Blowhole Road. It has the bins of the dog poo bags, so it's just some concern that there wasn't any bin there anymore. And wondering why it was removed and if it will be replaced.
Mr. Reeve?
Through you, Mayor, I can certainly chase that one up and if necessary put a service request in or provide some more information back.
Thank you. Sorry I didn't email, just got busy. Another one regarding the wonderful lights that are on the Blackmans Bay toilet. They are very lovely, but they are also very bright. And are they on all night at such a brightness?
Mr. Reeve.
Through you, Mayor, yes, they would be consistently on at that. So they'd be LED lights. So they generally tend to be relatively bright anyway, just so that in particular not only lights it up as a facade, but also for things like facial recognition and so forth around toilets from a crime prevention perspective as well.
Okay, thank you. That's good to know. There's a lot of great information in the appendix, so it's just I've got a couple of questions. 307, 2.5.5, it was a note regarding implement and deliver an annual employee health and wellbeing plan, just noting that has been limited during COVID restrictions. Just wondering if there is going to be any work on that area in the future.
General Manager.
Through you, Mr. Mayor. That's currently being considered in the context of the draft budget that's currently out for community consultation.
Thank you very much. The second one also relates to the Climate Change Act, and I just really want to thank staff for this really thorough response to this. It would have taken a long time, I'm sure, I would think. I'm wondering, so Mr. Dool did note that he has seen the response from other councillors. Do we know if LGAT will be providing a summary in regards to what other councils have submitted in regards to this? That's my first one. What is the process now, and will there be any further community consultation?
Mr. Dool.
Through you, Mayor, yeah. I would suggest the LGAT would circulate their final submission. I literally only got it this afternoon. The timing of the whole thing ended up being a little bit strange because of caretaker mode and things like this, so it straddled that. But I'm fairly confident that after this there will be quite extensive consultation on it, and I'm really hopeful that that will be the case. Can I also just add that, interestingly, that the two key people in the Climate Change Office were seconded to the COVID task force for quite a long period of time, so I think they'll be freed up fairly soon. So I think in the next year or so there'll be quite a bit going on. I'm fairly confident of that.
Great. Thank you, Mr. Dool. The next one relates to the Waste Strategy Report. It's so fantastic that we're meeting the targets. I'm wondering when the strategic initiatives will be developed for the 21-22, and will that come before Council in regards to what they're thinking about their strategies for that?
Mr. Reeve.
Through you, Mayor, yes, that's currently being worked on at the moment there. So there's intention to actually have a workshop with Council in May. So we'll go through all of the upcoming stuff, all of the planned stuff for next financial year.
Great, thank you.
Councillor Wass. Oh, sorry, Councillor Bastone, then Councillor Wass. Councillor Bastone.
Sorry, I forgot one of my questions. It's also in the appendix on page 303. 1.4.2, Progressive Development of the Alternative Energy Precinct, awaiting contact from potential proponent.
Mr. Dool.
Thank you, Mayor. We had contact about a month ago with the proponent, and it was suggested that there would be a development application coming through in May, and I did email them last week and I haven't heard back yet, but I'm led to believe that it will proceed and there'll be a development application soon.
So can I just ask a supplementary on that then? Is this the second proponent of the site?
Mr. Dool.
Through you, Mayor, yes, it's the Tasmanian proponent.
Thank you.
Councillor Wass.
Thank you, Mayor. Does the KWS receive any financial assistance from the tyre stewardship? And if not, are there funds available from the tyre stewardship that KWS can apply for?
Mr. Reeve.
Through you, Mayor, no, I don't believe so. Certainly the second part of the question I can follow up and provide a further response on.
Councillor Cordova.
Thanks, Mayor. A quick question about safety at the Kingston Park playground. And it was spurred on by a constituent showing some concern that their young one might be able to run onto the road or get out of the playground, so to speak. So in addition to the CCTV and the lighting, is the provision of fencing adequate to ensure that young people are not at risk of wandering outside the perimeter of the park? And is this potentially something the safety committee might look at?
Mr. Smee.
Through you, Mayor. The playground's been subject to three independent safety audits. The toddlers' playground is fully fenced. The remainder of the playground is designed to have appropriate parental supervision. So it's not the case that a parent can simply let their child run unsupervised throughout the majority of the playground. There is a level of supervision required, and that level of supervision obviously needs to relate to the age of the child, etc.
Thank you, that's very helpful.
Okay, there's no further lights on. It means that we will go to questions on notice from councillors. There's one there from about staff leave on Bruny Island from Councillor Grace, and a response there from Mr. Reeve. Open session is now adjourned. Planning authority commences at 6:21 p.m. First item is delegated report for application DA 2020-696 Browns Road, Kingston. It's a recommendation on page 19. Would anyone like to move or second it? Councillor Cordova, and seconded by Councillor Midgley. Councillor Cordova.
Thanks very much, Mayor. I'm looking forward to the discussion around this, but I'll take us through the basics. Essentially, we're looking now at the DA for Browns Road, Kingston, and it's a vehicle parking facility, a park and ride. And so this is currently an area that is being utilised as a kind of informal park and ride area. There's an existing car park on the subject site from Browns Road. And as part of the city deal, as part of the 2019 shared 10-year vision between the Australian and Tasmanian governments and the Clarence, Glenorchy, Hobart and Kingborough councils, one of the main aims was to bust congestion. And of course, we all know that one of the easiest ways to bust congestion is getting more people to use public transport. So in addition to increasing the frequency and reliability of public transport, one of the ways that we can help that on Kingborough Council is to have park and ride facilities. So I might just leave it there, and I welcome the debate about this park and ride proposal. Thanks.
Councillor Reeks.
Thank you. Look, I'm of course delighted to see more park and ride facilities in Kingborough, provided Metro supplies the buses to service these adequately. That remains to be seen. But in relation to this DA, I'm interested in, I think from what I can see from the plans, there are three disabled parking spaces. I wonder if that could just be confirmed.
Need his. Councillor Grace doesn't need his microphone if you wanted to steal that.
No, we can take his.
Quite famously absent. Councillor Reed. Ms. Tolman.
Through you, Mayor, I'm just looking at the plans on page 33, and it does indicate that there are three access for all parking spaces.
And I'm just wondering, I'm assuming that, because it's not shown on the plans, and I know the plans only relate to the actual car park area, but as an extension to this, are there any plans to put a walkway, a roof over the walkway that people will need to use? Because what concerns me is that there is a large distance from the park and ride facility to where people will actually get on the bus. And my interpretation of a park and ride has generally been you park your car right there and you get on the bus. This is a park walk and ride facility, and in the middle of winter isn't going to be particularly pleasant. So I'm just wondering, are we aware, whether Department of State Growth have submitted this, have any future plans to put a covered walkway over the bridge that goes across the southern outlet?
Oh.
Through you, Mayor, that doesn't form part of this planning application, just to make it clear for the decision-making tonight. And I'm not aware that there is an intention to do a covered walkway. Perhaps those questions could go to the Department of State Growth.
Thank you. I will follow up with them because I know when this matter has been discussed at the Access Committee that there is some concern that either people in wheelchairs or people who use some other form of mobility device, whether it be, you know, crutches or walkers, who want to use this facility will have a long walk, as others will, but, you know, potentially take them longer to walk the distance, which is a couple of hundred metres, to actually get on the bus. So they're not going to be getting on the bus right there. So that's certainly something that we will pursue as an Access Committee.
Councillor Bastone, and then Councillor Fox, and then Councillor Midgley.
Thank you, Mayor. I've been up and sat in my car parked up there and watched the car park, feeling a bit like a stalker, but...
acting like one, too.
Sorry. Acting like a stalker, yes. I noticed quite a number of those cars were actually used by people in the works around, the workshops or factories that are up there. They were not being used for park and ride. But the main concern I have is for people who are in the car park who then need to cross Groningen Road to get to the footpath, which is on the south side, go along there, then they get to the other end of the bridge, and then they have to cross at least one Groningen Road again. Now, this just doesn't seem feasible in a wheelchair. The footpath is not very wide, and is there not anything we can do about insisting that there be some sort of crossing put in, or perhaps speed calming devices, because as I said, I sat there and watched and they come quite fast around that corner.
Through you, Mayor, under the provisions of the planning scheme, there's no power to make those requirements. While the suggestions make good sense, it would need to be something that council, not the planning authority, would need to advocate with DSG.
Just want to point out here, I've given a lot of latitude on, we do need to try and stick to the plan. I gave Councillor Reid a bit as well. We'll try and stick to the planning scheme. Councillor Fox and then Councillor Mitchell. Councillor Fox.
I guess I'm in the similar position. I note on page 23 there's a picture of the car park in red and yellow, and then below that a vague line that goes down to the southern outlet, which is a very wet and slippery and awkward path for people to come up when they get out of the bus on the southern outlet there. So again, I mean, I realise that this is a development application and I fully support it, and I'm also aware that all infrastructure for pedestrians or cyclists would probably have to be put in by council to make it actually useful for active transport. And I think that's disappointing. Perhaps we should ask for a grant from the state government to do it, but it's a bit strange having an isolated car park here which is not very accessible to either pedestrians
Council
or
Fox
cyclists.
Okay. I don't think we've made any points. Not a single component so far has been in about the planning scheme. That's true, sorry. But maybe one was... Okay, just for those watching at home, we're meeting here as a planning authority, which means that we're really here to interrogate whether the application meets the scheme. But you may be able to tell that we have raised a few issues as council. We've done so to the department directly already, but it sounds like we might need to re-raise them. Councillor Midgley.
Thank you, Mayor. I hope I can
say... On the planning scheme.
Yes, thank you, Mayor. It's a great shelter. I love it. Just a couple of questions. So, currently, do we know how many parking spaces estimating there are there currently? It states in the report there's 44 that are due to be there, but how many are there currently?
It's informal at the moment, so
informal.
Just as many as
just
you can...
Just seems more than 44. Anyway, I was just wondering about that one.
Yes.
I can't understand. I'm trying to get my head around, and I have read it, and there's big agenda tonight to get our heads around. The footpath, and it is noted, they do talk about the footpath in here, but the aim of the pathway provided along the Browns Road frontage, I'm just not clear how long that pathway goes for.
Ms. Tyler
Moore. Let us get a bit of a picture, is that all right? What pathway are they actually implementing as part of this DA?
Through you, Mayor, I'm just having a look at the plans to get the details. I just think it's worth making the comment that the reason these things aren't captured, while all the points that have been made are good and valid, and I personally agree with them, the planning team doesn't recognise park and ride. It doesn't know what park and ride is because the planning scheme has, over its time of the different schemes, the 2000, the 2015 schemes, and now and the one that had that before, park and ride sort of wasn't really a thing at the start, and as they go through each version of the planning scheme, they've never really picked it up. It would make good sense moving forward that there was some policy around that so that other councils have the ability to make that assessment, because certainly other councils will be in a similar boat where there's very little to assess for the requirements of the car parking. So that's why we can't, just giving you the idea of why we can't assess it, because it just doesn't understand what it is. With respect to the question about the Browns Road frontage, I'm just trying to have a look at the plans, and I don't know offhand what it is, but obviously they've provided it because it's an immediate nexus to the site, and have provided that where there is currently just no formal curb and channel.
So I guess, to summary, it's quite basic, the footpath.
Currently there's not a footpath there, I believe.
Thank you. Can I ask a couple of questions about the public consultation representations? Thank you, Mayor. So, noting as well from Ms. Tyler Moore in regards to that there is no planning scheme regarding the park and ride, that is the same for the bike design. So the point around the issue regarding the bike design, even though it might not be, I think this one was okay, but again, there's no planning scheme that we can assess the suitability and the great, you know, an aspirational kind of park bike rack design as well. So that again is disappointing and a gap in the planning scheme. The matters of issue, access and security, as noted here, I think they're really great representations around that. Again, as staff says, there's no requirements in the planning scheme to look at this, and it's a matter that State Growth will consider. How will they keep in contact with council in regards to how they're going to mitigate some of these matters that I guess are raised tonight that don't fit the planning scheme? So the issue of the access and security, how are we going to be kept? Like the response says that this is considered to be a matter for State Growth, and as the manager and operator of the park and road facility, and the comments have been forwarded to the application and State Growth for their consideration. Will we hear anything more?
I think by your own definition, you're not talking about the planning scheme, but we're happy to raise it with you afterwards.
Thank you. I'm just noting. Okay, well, the other matters that I just would like to note that the public consultation representations have all considered and raised some very important points, and I hope that the applicant has a look at those.
Councillor Bastine.
Yes, if I may ask a question. In the recommendation, part two, park and ride shall be managed and used for the purposes of a public park and ride facility in association with the bus network and not be used for any other vehicle parking activity. How are we going to know whether it's park and ride or whether they're working in the factories directly opposite?
It's definitely not in the planning scheme.
No, but it's in our recommendation.
Okay, Ms. Tollemore.
Through you, Mayor, we're aware, obviously, that that area is already being used informally as a car parking area. We're aware of the potential. The planning scheme is fairly limited on what it's saying, but the point is that we're issuing a permit for a use associated with public transport, so therefore a park and ride, even though the scheme doesn't technically recognise it, but we're saying it's that. So you can't, because you could just apply to build a car park, as developers do, just build car parks. We're saying it's associated with the public transport. How they're going to monitor is up to them. It wasn't up to us to prescribe how they did that. It's up to them. The condition will allow us, which undoubtedly people will come and complain to council when it's not operating the way it should, which we will then you know, raised that it's DSG's responsibility, but it does give us that ability to flag, as we are often the connection with the public, and then we can flag it and potentially work with them. It's best we work with the state agencies to try and resolve these matters, and that does give us a little bit of power to do that.
Councillor Wass.
Thank you, Mayor. In answer to your question, according to staff, it does meet the planning scheme. But I have a couple of questions, and one, I suppose to start with, my comment is that it's going to be a waste of money. It is not going to work. It is not going to attract the patronage that, is expected.
Definitely not in order.
No, I know. But we have to face reality, because there are some issues that come out of that. I'd like to touch on recommendation number two that was just touched on. One of the questions I asked at the briefing session was, where are the existing cars going to go? Now, it doesn't come under the planning scheme, I know. But the
Hang on, Councillor Wass, I can't.
But the
let
thing
you
is, Mia.
Say at the same time that you know it doesn't come under the planning scheme and then continue to debate it.
Well, so, the question I have.
Yeah.
Is where is the extension car park going to go for these people who are going to be turfed out of where they now park?
Yeah, which is, as you know, is out of order and not a question that pertains to the planning scheme.
I'm sure half the population that park up there want to know that question, and we need to tell them.
Okay. That's a good point. That's out of order, but you can continue with
the next question. Is why are we not insisting on three motorcycle parking spaces? We're happy to take two. Why not three? That is 50% short of what it should be. If you're talking percentages, 50% is a large number, and then we'll carry that forward to the next debate on the next item otherwise.
Ms. Tyler Moore, is there a way for us to insist on more motorcycle parking, under the planning scheme, of course?
Through you, Mayor, it could add a condition that requires additional provision of motorbike parking on the site.
Because if we're going to get motorcycles parking out of the two park and rides, this is the one it will be.
Do you like to suggest an amendment then?
So I'm happy to amend wherever it is in the recommendation that the parking for motorcycles be increased to three.
Sorry, increased to three?
Instead of two, as per our planning scheme.
Can anyone find the condition number? That would greatly assist at this point.
Because on page 17, we're not complying if we provide two.
If I may, Mayor.
Yes, Sophie. Thank you.
Through you, Mayor, there is no specific condition currently specifying the number of motorbike parking spaces, because it's demonstrated on the plans. It would need to be a fresh condition.
General Manager, you had a...
Yeah, through you, Mr. Mayor. Ms. Tyler Moore, is it possible that it could be an inclusion under Condition 1 that references the plan references?
Through you, Mayor, we would need to completely reword that condition, but we do have a draft condition in our standard conditions that we can use that I can provide.
What's the easiest way to deal with it, Ms. Tyler Moore? What would you like us to do?
Can substitute the condition with an alternative one that basically, so when we issue the planning permit, or when you issue the planning permit, we won't give them a set of plans. It will require that prior to any commencement of any works, they must submit to council an amended set of plans. Obviously, they have an opportunity to appeal any conditions on the planning permit.
Yeah, it's just I'm just looking for what words we need in the motion, in the recommendation here. So, do we just want to add an extra one that says a condition? Do we want to add a condition 12 in?
I can provide wording for an alternative for condition 1.
Okay.
Just so long as I'm not trying to provide that whilst answering questions on other reports.
Well, Councillor Westwood actually has her light on, so what we could do is take a contribution from Councillor Westwood while you have a look at that, if you like. Is that okay? Have you finished your contribution, Councillor Wass? Would you like? Okay. Councillor Westwood, of course, relevant to the planning scheme.
Yes, I hope so. Condition four about lighting. I know according to the planning scheme, the park and ride complies because it's not within 50 metres of a residential zone. I'm just wondering in terms of ensuring that the external lighting does not have an unreasonable impact on residential amenity and must be baffled. In terms of lighting, so that the lighting is enough for people to see where they're going when they're walking from the park and ride some distance to the bus stop, is there anything that the planning scheme contains that says the lighting must be adequate for safety standards?
Ms. Tyler Moore.
Through you, Mayor, because the scheme doesn't recognise park and ride, it doesn't. But in saying that, the lighting you're referring to is street lighting that exists, and if it, DSG may want to consider upgrading that if it's going to be more heavily utilised, but I would hope that it's already lit appropriately because of that overpass.
Okay, thank you.
Noting that we interrupted you while you were drafting that, did you want a little bit more time? Yes. Councillor Walsh, you didn't have any further... No? Okay. Okay, for my contribution, sticking to the planning scheme, it's going to be hard. Just want to note that Council actually had a workshop with DSG about this late last year, and we provided a lot of the feedback that's been made tonight. And just to remind councillors that our then Deputy General Manager Tony Ferrier wrote quite an extensive email to DSG outlining some of the concerns, all of the concerns, and I haven't seen the response to that. But I note that the development application, as it turned out later, had already been lodged with Kingborough Council before the workshop, and I suspect that it hasn't been amended because we're still unhappy with it, and that is disappointing. Now that I've padded and broken the rules that I have talked about, well, I had to pad because we're waiting for the condition. No, it was a padding issue. We could have a 5-minute break, you know. And that would give... that's a good idea. We'll go through 7 minutes, till about 10 to 7 we'll do. So that'll be 8.